Well, good morning. It's early morning kickoff. I went to the Nats game last night, and they won 25-4. So there was a lot of screaming going on. You can tell from my voice that I was actively engaged in cheering. So we're going to go ahead and get started. For those of you who are sitting on that side of the room, you might want to move over to this side because it's really, I sat over there yesterday and by the end of the session my neck was all crinked. The other thing is you can sit up front. This isn't like church, you know, we're not going to point at you and call out your sins or anything. So, you know, if you want to move up a little bit, that might be worthwhile too. So what you see here is this is the agenda for today. We're going to talk about SCRI programmatically, and then Megan's going to give some of her impressions, and many of you have probably heard me say in the past, the program support people are really the people that are critical to the program. So Megan is our program specialist, and she makes sure that everything goes the way it's supposed to go, and we have program assistants who help with travel and logistics, setting up meeting rooms and stuff like that. So without those folks doing their job, the program wouldn't really work the way it does. So our hats are off to them. And then once we cover some of the administrivia, we're going to have a panel of panel managers. So the panel managers are the people that recruit the reviewers. They make the assignments. They assign the applications to the reviewers to review. They husband the process through. They make sure that the reviewers are submitting their reviews on time, and they run the panel meeting. So they listen to all of the comments. They look at the panel summaries, make sure that the panel summaries are getting written. So their role is extremely important, and they know what differentiates a successful application from a not successful application. So we'll have them come up and they'll talk, they'll give some of their impressions, and then we'll throw it open for questions. So it's a resource you should take advantage of. And then we have three successful applicants, all have different experiences with SCRI, and so I've asked each one of them to address a particular aspect of SCRI, so they'll talk about that, and then they'll be available for your questions as well. So that's the format we're going to use today. So I'm first on the agenda, and if you go back, you can see I have a really long title. How is SCRI distinctive? What's the current approach to the stakeholder relevance review? And what's the future opportunity? So I've broken it down into those three sections. And so how is SCRI distinctive? And if you talk to some of our administrators at NIFA, they're really not pleased that SCRI is so distinctive, but it really is. It's different than most other NIFA competitive grant programs. And I've broken it down into several categories. So it's different administratively. First of all, the funding is mandatory, and it's mandatory at $80 million a year. And I didn't actually put it on here, but this is the only program that deals with a specific subset of agricultural products. Okay, all of the other programs that we have deal with all agricultural products. So it's distinctive in that way as well. There's only three competitive programs that are mandatory. And what the mandatory funding means is that we don't have to wait for appropriations to be passed and signed by the president in order to have our funds available. So in the 2014 Farm Bill I mentioned yesterday, if you were here, it says that the funds are available in 2014 and every year thereafter, which means that the funding is permanent. So that is that's also important, because if we don't have a new Farm Bill at the end of this fiscal year, we will still have money to operate in fiscal year 2019. And so that gives us some, it really helps us in our planning, and it helps you guys in your planning as well. The 2014 farm, in the lead up to the 2014 Farm Bill, the research committee of the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance was putting out feelers about, you know, how would you feel if we had an industry relevance review? And so some of the higher administrators said, absolutely not. We're not going to do that. That's not, you know, if we do it for SCRI, we're going to wind up having to do it for all of our programs, and we don't want to do that. It's too much work, yada, yada, yada. And so I said, well, you know, the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance is actually that organization that got SCRI into the Farm Bill in the first place. They got the money kicked up, you know, and so I don't think it's in our best interest to oppose something, you know, if we can figure out how to do it. And so we got tasked, Dan Schmolt and I, Dan, he's retired now, but he was a co-director of SCRI. So we got tasked with coming up with a plan for how we would implement the relevance review. And then we negotiated with, not me, but Sunny Ramaswamy negotiated with Congress so that we could have the relevance review done as a pre-application process. So the industry tells us these are the projects that are important to us on an annual basis. Those projects are invited to submit full applications, and we review those for scientific merit. We'll get into some more details in a little bit. The other thing that is important is that we have an annual consultation with the Specialty Crop Committee. This was created in 2004. They're a consultative body to the Secretary of Agriculture. So we have our annual consultation with them. They make recommendations to the Secretary. We're tasked with responding to those recommendations. And if they make reasonable recommendations, we will implement them. We incorporate them into our process. Some of the recommendations that they've made, we've said, no, that's not how we do things. Wouldn't be fair, blah, blah. So we don't do it. But it's important because for you guys to remember that the industry does have input into how this program is administered. Programmatically, it's different. In 2008, when we required a transdisciplinary system science approach, and we were the only program that did that. Now, other programs have started to adopt that. The new Sustainable Agricultural Systems portion of AFRI has adopted the system science approach, and there's a growing understanding that a transdisciplinary approach where we get biological, physical, and social scientists working on the same problem at the same time, it can be really beneficial. And I've heard it from many of our SCRI project directors. We had a project directors meeting earlier in the week, and they were saying, Minot, when I talked to the social scientists, I was amazed. I really learned a lot of different things that I wouldn't have thought about. And that, you know, it just makes sense, right? We're trained as biologists. They're trained as social scientists. It's a different language, a different way of looking at the universe. And so we can learn a lot from them, and it helps, you know, what we want to do is try to solve problems at the speed of business. And it really helps to do that. And I've told people in the past, if all solutions were biological, we wouldn't have any problems anymore because we've been doing biology for, you know, thousands of years. It's just not that way. The other thing that's different programmatically, and this was one of, again, at the beginning, we required projects to develop a logic model. And I, you know, when I first started, was the first exposed to logic models, I called them illogic models. I didn't understand, you know, it just didn't make any sense to me. But then I realized that's because, as a Westerner, I always read from the left to the right. But if you look at a logic model and you read it from the right to the left, it makes complete sense. If you know what you want to accomplish in the long term, intermediate term, and short term, then all those other boxes you can fill in very, you know, not simply, but it gives you the foundation to create your objectives, to create your experimental plan. And so we required the logic model, and we actually created a logic model for SCRI, and we're still the only program that's done that. We have the relevance review, and we've always required that end users be involved in identifying project objectives and that they stay involved in the projects throughout the project life. So as you're putting your projects together, don't come up with an idea. And I used to do this all the time, right? I would be in the shower in the morning, and I'd get this great idea, and I'd go out and I'd find like four or five growers that would say, yeah, that's a great idea. Well, if you get a letter of support like that, it's not going to get through the relevance review. You've got to sit down with your stakeholders, find out what it is they really need, and then build your project based on those needs. Build your logic model with them at the table rather than you build the logic model and then just get them to rubber stamp it. So that's programmatically a very big difference. The pre-apps used for the industry relevance review, were the only program in NIFA that uses a pre-application process. AFRI uses letters of intent. I don't see much point in a letter of intent because it's a lot of work for the program staff. And if they say, well, this isn't really what we're interested in this year, you can still submit an application, okay? With our pre-application process, when it goes through the relevance review, the industry reviewers decide which applications get invited. And so we don't put our RFA, we put out a request for pre-applications, an RFPA, but the RFA only goes to those people that are invited. So if you don't get that in the email, it's impossible for you to even know how to apply. So that is a major difference. And, well, we'll go into it a little bit more. So now I'm going to shift into our approach to the industry relevance review. And this is how I describe it. It's orchestrated chaos. Last year we had 174 pre-applications submitted. And so I go through, as I accept them from grants.gov, I start to lump them according to crop groups or different topics. So like we have, pollinators is one of the legislative focus areas for SCRI. And so rather than try to, put pollinator projects into each one of the crop categories, we have a panel for pollinator and pollinator issues. We have one for produce food safety. If there are other, now if you look at the Senate version of the next farm bill, there's a lot of language being added around automation, sensor technology. So rather than go crop by crop, it might be better if we have different panels. So in 2018, we wound up with 19 of these panels. So one of the things about, and we discovered even in before the relevance review was required, we always tried to get industry scientists to be on SCRI panels. And it's really difficult to get people who work, 60, 70 hours a week to give up that amount of time that's required to review applications. And so we understand that, and then if you're a scientist working for a company, you're more likely to make the time to do it. But if you're a person who gets up every morning at 4 o'clock, looks at the AgNet, looks at the weather forecast, and then goes out and works, until 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night growing and raising crops, you don't have a lot of time to do these sorts of things. So what we try to do is when we recruit people to be on these relevance panels, we tell them, we want to keep your time commitment down to 20 hours. It takes about an hour to review one of these pre-applications. And so we have to keep the number of pre-applications in a particular panel around 10, 10 to 12, because they have to go through an orientation. And then we have a conference call that they have to join and where the decisions are made. And so that's why we have so many panels. We had 164 industry reviewers in the last round. So you can ask Megan, that is a lot of work for our support staff, because it's the same amount of work putting the industry reviewers into our system as it is to put one of our scientific merit reviewers into the system. And so keeping track of all those, and then there's, a lot of them are, it's not that they're not tech savvy, it's just that our IT systems are terrible. So they're always crashing. They if they don't hold their nose right when they enter their password, it won't let them into the system. Or if they get into the system, we're having a problem right now with the citrus disease research and extension program, where they get into the system and it says you don't have any applications to review. Well, I know that's not true, but I don't know how to fix it. So it's there's a lot of things that go on there. So the way that we do it is, let's say there's 10 applications for tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants, okay? And we have 9 industry representatives that deal with those crops. All of the reviewers, all 9 of those reviewers, review all 10 of the pre-applications. So that when we have our conference call discussions, we don't have to describe the pre-applications. Everybody's read it. Everybody can just, you know, start discussing it and making the decisions. The specialty crop committee has recommended that only 50% of the pre-apps that are submitted be invited to submit full applications. And we rejected that recommendation. We said, no, we don't want to have a hard number, because there may, you know, if we say, yes, that's what we're going to do, what happens in that situation where in that tomato, pepper, eggplant panel, there was really 8 projects that were really important to the industry, but you only get to put forward 5. So that we didn't want to get into that kind of a situation. So but remember that the panel manager for the relevance review is an industry representative. And, you know, you could call it collusion if you want, but they sort of have that in the back of their mind, that they only want the most important projects to come forward. Because when you get to the scientific merit review, and maybe some of you have been reviewers in the past, you know that it takes more than an hour to review one of those applications. And so if they're putting all of their pre-applications forward to full applications, the ones that are most important, you know, the reviewers only have so much time. You know, everybody's got a life. So the ones that are really important aren't going to get the same level of consideration that they would if there's fewer applications in the pool. So that's their reasoning behind trying to do that. And I'm already over time. So the funding recommendations they're developed by the scientific merit panel, but the specialty crop committee's recommended that the results of the relevance review be given equal weight with the results of the scientific merit review. So for those of you who've been on panels, you know that we put the applications, once they're discussed, we put them into funding categories. Outstanding means that it has to be funded. High priority for funding, HPF, means that it should be funded. And so the difference between outstanding and high priority for funding is really important. Must versus should. Okay, so if you have a project that's excellent for scientific merit, but the relevance review was kind of, you know, ho-hum, it might get placed in high priority for funding. Conversely, if you have a project that's very good for scientific merit, but was the most important project in a particular panel, that project might get put into the outstanding category. So that's how we try to make sure that the relevance review and the merit review are of equal weight. So the growing the future opportunity, we talked about the future farm bill yesterday. The current farm bill expires at the close of business on September 30th of this year. That's the end of our fiscal year. Both the House and the Senate have passed versions of a new farm bill. It hasn't gone to conference. I said there it has gone to conference. What happened was the House voted to go to conference, and they've identified their conferees. The Senate has not done that yet. But the Senate is still in session, and they're working on it. So hopefully before they go on their summer recess, they'll have identified who those conferees are going to be. And the staffers actually stay in town and work. And so once we know who's going to be in the conference, then those staffers will get to work. Both versions of the next farm bill do maintain the citrus disease research and extension portion. The Senate version funds it in a different way. In essence, we would have $105 million if the Senate version is followed.